Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Well, the USDA loses 900,000 acres, the beans rally, and then they die, and the trade and the government finally agree on a corn number. What will it all mean to the futures? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Daryl Ray, Agricultural Policy Specialist at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. Our panelists today are Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. The USDA and the trade agreed that U.S. farmers are harvesting about 41.6 bushels to the acres for the soybean crop. They disagree, however, on the number of acres that were planted. USDA says the official FSA certified acreage is now 900,000 lower than expected. Still, we've heard tales of soybean piles on the ground in Iowa. Is the 25-cent rally for the day and the week all that we'll get from this last report? We'll start with you, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, there's a bean pile even over in Indiana, Todd, that we saw just over about 20 miles from us. So it's not just in Iowa. There's crazy people all over the world. The one thing we can say about this bean rally was we feel it was highly over-exaggerated by this Refco deal and a lot of their customers just clearing out of their accounts and selling out. And I think that it exaggerated the rally to start with. It hit stops and continued and held it. We really thought when we saw the number that maybe 550 was a good number on the bottom for now. But 610 looks to be pretty strong resistance for right now.
Your expectations?
I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit further run up here just because there probably are a lot of stops above the 50-day moving average. That, you know, 601 to 610 or 15 possibly, but I would expect any additional strength to be very short-lived and to be a real selling opportunity, and it might very well be peaking right here. I don't think there's a lot upside, but we sure can't rule out another pop.
And what do you have to say about it, Mr.
I think that we're just in, we've moved the range up. We were 560 to 580 for a while. I think we're now maybe 580 to 610 for a while. I just don't see us going through the roof, and I still see us with possible downside
and
down the road.
That was Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and before him, of course, Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities here in Champaign. The numbers as they came out Wednesday from the United States Department of Agriculture pegged the soybean crop at 2.967 billion bushels with a 260 million ending stocks. That's up from the 205 last year. Put that in context, if you would, for me, Clayton, to the upcoming Brazilian crop and what it all might mean.
Well, I think it certainly makes the market a lot more sensitive to the possibility of an acreage reduction that we keep hearing hints of coming from South America. The Brazilian estimate from USDA on that report was still 60 million metric tons. A lot of people thought they might lower it to maybe 58 or something like that. But I don't know, the 260 certainly gives us a little less breathing room, but it's still ample supply of beans, and the market, as we all know in many recent years here, just has sort of a the attitude that any extra bushels whatsoever are too many bushels. So I think that the 260 is, once the dust settles from you know, this pop here and you get all the margin-related support and so forth kind of work through the system, I'd be surprised if you can get much fundamental reason for buyers to come in here, especially in light of the fact that even if South America did lose a couple million metric tons off the production, we're still looking at an all-time high projected world carryover.
Let me poll the crew here. Bearish, friendly, neutral, bullish the bean market?
I'm neutral the bean market for now. I think that South American, if we do have less acres by 3 or 4%, that'll help keep it up. Good usage worldwide is helping. Helping it there also. You got to remember, though, if South America has a normal crop bushel-wise per acre, that number added to what we've got is that big number that Clayton's talking about that could push it downward.
I'd have to say I'm a mild bear at this point, with the possible exception, like I said a minute ago, that maybe we could get another 10 or 15 cent pop. But I just think that in all likelihood, I think after everything's found a home, harvest is done, once you hit that second harvest, so to speak, in January and February, assuming no weather problems pop up in South America, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see us make new lows for the January and March contracts.
Slight bear like Clayton, but I'm also going to be a slight bull about the cash basis. I think the farmer is not selling beans or corn right now. I think we're going to see this basis tighten up, but I'm not wildly bullish the board.
Let's talk about the numbers from the USDA on the corn. 10.857 billion bushels was what the corn crop was pegged at. And oddly enough, the USDA and the trade actually agree on something this time around in the corn market, and the 2.2 billion bushel carryout for next year. So I've got some questions here, and I've been thinking about the corn market, maybe too much, potentially, that if you look at the corn market, we have a 2.2 billion bushel carryout. USDA says there's another 185 million bushels of exports that are available. That's because they, in part, lowered the Chinese corn crop, and they have some ideas that even if they didn't export, that they lowered that crop, but that China won't be able to export many bushels because they just have a growing need and demand internally, and that the United States will pick up some of those exports. So what happens if we look at this marketplace, and I asked this a couple of weeks ago, and people, maybe it was last week, people kind of thought it was funny, but if you look at the long terms and say, well, there's a potential for a triple bottom here. We have China possibly back out of the market, at least in terms of exports. And there's a great deal of possibility for an upside potential on the marketplace.
Well, we have a large, large amount of corn to work through, and that might push the lows further into the winter instead of seeing a bounce after harvest. But you got to look at the piles that are out there. What are we going to do with them? Who's ready to buy it? And right now, the basis, again, as we talked about beans, the basis is wide, wide, wide. You go to the Gulf, and they're paying more there, but it's being sucked up by the transportation costs. We've got real problems there in the transportation. But long term, I think corn has got some potential to move up, but we've got to grind through a lot this big crop and big carryout.
We have ethanol plants and livestock that are on the way up here in the United States for domestic usage.
Well, for one thing, I have a real problem in leaning on or building my hopes up for China to come along and be the white knight and save the corn market by all of a sudden showing this big surge in demand. The numbers that we get from over there are just extremely unreliable. We've been saying for a couple of years how they're going to be big buyers, and then every time the next day they come out and it turns out, gosh, they're subsidizing exports to push more out the door, it seems like. So The U.S. carryover is a big stumbling block, kind of like Pete said. And we've got a carryover now. It's the highest it's been in 10 years. And sure, ethanol is great, it's done fantastic things so far. At least maybe built a higher floor into these markets. But that new demand can only come online so fast. So I don't look for that to be a big help in a short term, year to 18 month type time frame.
Todd, how bearish can we get $1.49 corn? That's what it was in Iowa today. I just can't get too down on $1.49 corn at this level in time with the energy possibilities that we have and whatever. Did I say I was wildly bullish? No, didn't say that either. I think that we've got a lot of corn, but we're going to improve the basis level as we get this stuff put away. The farmers are not selling it. There are too many piles out there, though, and they're going to have to be picked up, covered up, or something done with. So it isn't going to come as soon as I was hoping for. So unfortunately, most December calls probably aren't going to be worth a lot of money. We're going to need probably out in March, May, maybe even the July time frame. But with that, those fertilizer costs we've got, the diesel fuel costs, we're going to still need to buy some corn acres for next year. So let's not give up totally on this corn market.
Let's take a look at all the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade very quickly. We'll start with the wheat December contract this week at a high of $3.50. They're low at $3.35¾. Settlement price up a penny there at $3.39 for the Dease contract. July at $3.66½, up 1¼ from last week. December corn at $2.07½ on the high, the low at $2.01¾. December settled $2.03½. They were up one. And July corn at $2.30½, unchanged from last week. November soybeans, $5.95½, the high, the low at $5.54. November beans settling at $5.89½, up 25¼ from last week. And July futures at $6.17 were up 23, and that from last week as well. Of course, all those bean gains came on just the one day on Wednesday. I do have to ask, when you talked to your customers that day, did you all have them take the 7-cent LDP at that point?
Yeah, we told people to take it.
Everybody else?
Yes, I have to say that was very much the thought of the day.
All right. So, and then everybody wants to know, what are we doing on corn for LDP? Are you taking it as you harvest?
Take it as you harvest. We had some guys saying, oh, we'll get 50, but I mean mid-40s, 42 to 45, I think, this week in Illinois. That's an awfully big number to pass up, and I think they ought to be taken.
I believe we're officially at about 40%, but that's about all we've got harvested in our area, Todd, so that's pretty well as we get it.
Are we expecting the LDP to continue to stay above that 40-cent level?
Longer than we thought it would, probably, but I'm also saying that we're going to see some bases start to tighten in here after a while, because there's still going to be the elevators are not buying the corn. The farmers are taking the money from the government, and they are not selling their corn. They're holding awfully tight.
Tell me about what you've been hearing about infrastructure, because after we got through with Katrina and Rita and what's been happening with the rail cars and with barge traffic, what are we hearing? And has it really cleared up at all yet?
Well, we shipped out more last week than we had since Katrina. We shipped out a lot from the Gulf. But the problem is getting it there, the expense to get it there, the barge freight, the rail cars, the trucks. Number one, they didn't plan for enough because we thought we were not going to have as big a crop. Number two, we had the big crop, and then all that hit. And as a result, people don't have it lined up, and we've got elevators plugged in lots of places that are open for one crop of the over, partial days, maybe even closed some days. So we've got to get that part straightened out before we can really see things start to get better on the basis side.
Todd, one other thing there. I think that we have to look at another thing. There's a lot of carry built in this market, and a lot of people aren't wanting to move it on right now. We say there aren't barges available. We say the freight is high. But the farmer isn't selling. The elevator can't afford to sell when the basis is this wide and there's this much carry. That's why we're seeing piles rather than scramble for things. I think there's probably barges available. I think there's probably great rail cars available, but we aren't using them because of the carry.
So a farmer's doing the right thing at this point by holding on to it?
I think he's doing the right thing. I mean, if at all costs, you want to avoid dumping it in the cash market right now just because the basis is so horrendous. But and kind of like Wayne had said a minute ago, I think we all would agree we're very bullish on basis, you know, starting in the very near future. We probably have seen or are very close to the worst basis levels. But that's a whole different ball game than flat price futures. So it might very well be that, you know, selling July futures would make money, and holding cash corn would make money, because I think that the difference between those two is so wide that they will be coming together pretty rapidly in the not too distant future.
Selling out to get that carry and then replacing it. Calls right now are at, jiminy, cheap. You can buy May corn calls at the money for anywhere from, if it's May or July, from 8 to 14 cents. Storage is going to cost a lot more than that. So if you really do have to sell some of that stuff for far out where you get the carry, capture it, replace it with calls that cost 8 to 12 cents.
Yeah, farmers are notoriously cheap. What's the danger of taking the LDP and setting unpriced?
I think we could still have got, September went off at 195. I don't know that we've got much below that, but I think we're going to grind for a while, and we could go another nickel to a dime lower. I don't know that we've got really bad things below that, but we do have a huge amount of crop. But a lot of it has to do with that basis, that bad crop, that bad price the farmer's getting.
I should take that back. I shouldn't call them notoriously cheap. They just don't want to trade in that way.
You know, we all would like to say that corn can't go under the last two or three years low, Todd. We know it can. We don't know that we don't believe it's going to, but it can. It could go down 50 cents, especially if all the stocks are free stocks and there's nothing supporting it underneath. And these piles start going bad and they need to be moved and a few things along the way. The base, you know, things can move and things don't have to get better. We would like to think that they're going to. History tells us in general they do. But, you know, there's always the exception to the rule.
I'd like to add, too, I think it would be a big mistake to take your LDP and not build an alternative safety net, either by making a forward sale. The problem with the forward sale is you are locking in the flat price. Obviously, you, if you do a hedge to arrive, you can still improve your basis, which would be a good play. But ideally, I think a bearish option safety net would be the way to go. And I just think that there could be, once this stuff, the problem is there's too much grain in farmers' hands. And like Wayne said, everybody's holding on to ownership. They're not dumping it. And as such, the market's got to still deal with that somehow, and I think it's going to deal with it with lower futures prices at some point.
Todd, one of the things that we've done with some of our customers this past week was when the LDPs were over 45 cents, we went ahead and took the LDPs, but we went out to the May or the July and bought some puts for the corn that's still in the bin. So we're going to lock at least the carry up to there. Hopefully the basis will narrow in between. Doesn't have to, but we're sure hoping it's going to, but we are at least going to have a July price of, say, 240 locked in there, minus our about 15 cents on these options. So, but that's, you know, if we were in commercial storage or anything like that, that 14, 15 cents would get up real fast.
The December oats settled the week at $1.67 and a quarter. They were down 3/4. From the Mercantile Exchange this week, live cattle finished the October contract at 91.52 and a half on the high, the low at 88.97 and a half. The settlement for that contract at 89.27 and a half. They were off 97 and a half cents this week. The October feeder cattle at 117.67 and a half were down 65. Lean hogs, the October contract 68.60 on the high, the low at 67.05. Settlement price there at 67.37 and a half. They were down $1.17 and one half from last week. And the February pork bellies for the week at $87.95, finished $9.52 and a half cents lower from last week. In just a few moments, we'll return and talk with Darrell Ray at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, Agricultural Policy Analysis Center.
Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Click on AM and then on Agriculture.
I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Dr. Darrell Ray with the Ag Policy Analysis Center at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. Dr. Ray, thanks for joining us on Commodity Week. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
From time to time, we switch, of course, out of commodity analysis mode and into money of ag policy. Darrell Ray is an often reported expert in this area. His talents are utilized most often by organizations generally considered to be to the left of the agricultural center. I think I've characterized that properly. Is that right, Dr. Ray?
Probably.
Uh-huh. All right. Tell me, let's talk a little bit about what's been happening in the last week and a half. It's been a fairly fast and furious week and a half for agricultural policy. The Secretary of Agriculture on Thursday of last week making what most considered a very important agricultural policy speech, where he did not outline policy for USDA in the coming 2007 Farm Bill, but certainly set up the stage for what Robert Hartman outlined to the WTO on Sunday of this past Sunday in Geneva. Can you tell us what that policy statement from them said?
Basically, we have said that we're willing to reduce our trade distorting subsidies by 60%. To get that done, while we want other countries to respond in kind and in some cases respond at a greater level than that. We're interested in getting the EU and other developed countries to reduce their subsidies from 70% to 80%, also to reduce and then eventually eliminate export subsidies and reduce tariffs by a significant percentage and get that down to zero as soon as quick as we can.
My understanding of the policy as a whole is that what they suggested and proposed to the WTO is a 60% cut in the first 5 years of a 15-year phase-in with a five-year sort of set aside in the middle where nothing else happens, and then the final 5 years out to the 15 years total would eliminate all the trade-distorting subsidies. Is that right?
Yes, by 2023, I think. They want to get it totally eliminated, all kinds of subsidies, and like you say, in 15 years, take out the trade distorting, which is, you know, that is a tremendously ambitious goal.
It is an ambitious goal. In the policy, if I read this thing correctly, says that in the first year, they would cut trade distorting policies, and those would be LDPs here in the U.S., by as much as 20%, although, and that's on the amber box. And our cap on the amber box is actually larger than large enough that a 20% cut would not actually take out any of the LDPs that we've had to this date, so that in the first year there wouldn't really be anything that happened in the United States?
Well, I think that the one thing we have to remember is that the LDPs are going to be much larger than we're used to seeing in recent years with the prices that we're seeing. So the gap there is going to be much less than it used to be, but yes, there is an element of that. There's the maximum that we can spend under the WTO negotiating rules that we've already agreed to, and what we would propose, and then there's also how much we actually spend, and those numbers are not necessarily the
same. What was your analysis of this policy? Is the WTO proposal a good one in your opinion?
Well, I think that it's very bold. It's one of those things where they would like to get off center and get people to talk about the possibilities at hand. I suspect that it's probably more of a movement in the direction of free trade and without farm programs than many of the folks in the political arena in the U.S. can handle, and also I think we're probably expecting a lot out of EU, and we've also heard from Japan and India, and they are not necessarily as thrilled about it as they might be. So, you know, in some ways, I think we got some posturing going on before the Hong Kong meeting in December. They want to, you know, kind of put in their dibs and indicate that they have an interest in doing something. But then whether or not the something is as reasonable as it might be, or whether they even expect it to fly in the end, is open for discussion.
Secretary Johans referred in his speech to market access, but as you probably, and I'm sure I may or may not agree, I don't know, Europe and Japan are mature markets, and trying to pry them open may not be the most market access that farmers in the United States would be looking for. Would it be easier or much better for the United States to target China and India and other potential growth markets?
I think it probably would. You know, one of the things that that we have to recall or have to remember is that when we open access to markets, whether it be the EU or China or other countries in Asia, that we're not the only ones that are available to supply those markets. And I think that a lot of the discussion that we hear with regard to WTO negotiations would make it sound like everybody is going to benefit, and I'm not sure that that's possible. So I think that just as we've had, in my opinion, a tendency to overpromise the benefits of exports and international trade over the years, I think that we have a significant possibility for that in this go around as well.
And just very quickly, and we're out of time, frankly. Are you fearful at all that cutting these market programs that have been capitalized into land values in the United States will have a significantly detrimental impact?
Yes, I'm very, very afraid of that. I think that we are even if we get everything that we're trying to negotiate, I'm not sure that we're going to get the expansion in markets to the extent that the prices would increase far enough to offset the kind of government payments that we have. So I think that there is a good possibility of decapitalizing agriculture and the rural communities if we're not careful.
Is it okay in your mind if they get rid of the amber box payments, which would be the LDPs, potentially the countercyclical payments, and they simply do direct payments and conservation payments, which would be blue box and green box payments, and come up with close to the same money?
Well, in terms of the WTO, that is a good idea. I guess I worry a little bit about using direct payments at all, because in my view, the reason that we have problems with prices and incomes in agriculture is because we have a lack of price responsiveness on both the production side and the demand side. And whether we call it conservation payments or whether we call it LDPs or we call it something else, we're really not getting at the core issue. So it satisfies one objective, but I'm not sure it really solves the problem.
And we appreciate you being with us.
I appreciate your calling.
Dr. Darrell Ray is with the Ag Policy Analysis Center at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. He joined us here on Commodity Week. Our thanks to Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Illinois, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. That is this week's edition of Commodity Week. Be sure to tune in on Monday morning for the pre-opening commodity market report with Dave Dickey. That happens at 8:49. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.